Welcome back to Startup to Success on KLOS 95.5 FM HD3, SoCalArmenian.com.
And then what's amazing about events.com, actually, I think they both have this feature, is they register. And if they have to buy tickets, then they buy tickets on that website. Or if it's free, then they just still buy it, but they don't end up paying anything. But what I love about it is that they put in their email addresses. They have to in order to register. So then you have this list that's already automatically being captured, and you can always invite them later with your own email.
That's a really good tip. Thank you, Maria. I really appreciate it.
Listen, this is a Startup to Success show. So we love exchanging information. And as a marketing expert, I can't help but to always come up with ways to help others as well. Especially you doing something so amazing and so challenging too. I think it's pretty challenging.
Particularly with COVID, we've had challenges. You know, I have one staff member out sick right now with COVID, even though he's fully vaccinated and boosted. He's feeling much better, but you know, our rule is you can't come back till you test negative, and that might take a while. We had another staff member who was sick earlier this month. We've had several volunteers sick. Over December, a lot of people got sick, so that I'm trying desperately not to get it. So I'm trying to be really careful. I have a grandbaby coming in March. So I want to better not get sick and not be able to see my grandbaby. I'll be very upset.
No, that's definitely, that's a good reason, but you know, you do need to be healthy to continue doing the amazing work that you are doing.
Thank you.
So I know we talked about, you know, the fundraiser and obviously that's going to give you the opportunity to raise some money, but have you looked into grants? What other ways
do you
ask for money, which is by
the way, we have several different sources of revenue. One certainly is fundraising. So we do annual appeal, which usually happens in November, December. And then we have our spring fundraiser. I do write grants, and we actually got a grant for one of my staff members to take a grant writing class. So we both write grants. So that is definitely a good always good to invest in your staff. I think that's really good. We got a grant to pay for that. And we actually has got another grant. He's taking my director of operations is taking getting a certificate in nonprofit management. So that's really good. So we write grants, and we direct appeal donations, our fundraiser. We have a contract with Riverside County Department of Probation. So that's a revenue source. And then what has been a game changer for us is our little thrift boutique. Yeah. And it's a very simple business model. We charge $5. Every item, doesn't matter what it is $5. Buy four items, get your fifth item free.
Wow.
And just as an example, in December, we had, I think, an $11,000 month. And our boutique was closed for, unfortunately, we wanted to close it in August because we wanted to remodel it. We knocked out a wall, made it a little bit bigger. It was only going to be closed for 3 weeks. It ended up being closed for 7. And that actually happened in October, which is, you know, that's part of the beginning of the season here in the desert. Yeah. But it has come back, and it really, what I like about it, if you walk in, it does not look or smell like a thrift store. It looks like a high-end boutique you would see on El Paseo. Right. El Paseo Drive tries to be a little bit like, you know, Rodeo Drive, not quite, but that's where it is. But we still, so it has this very nice experience, but with thrift store prices, and we deal with volume, and that has been a game changer, because one of the things, this took me a long time to understand, and I'm sure, you know, startups and other, even in, you know, for-profit businesses, no one's going to invest money, i.e. give a grant or a donation, if you're really struggling. No one wants to invest in a sinking ship. It's hard to get grants the first 3 years. They want to see that if you can survive 3 years or longer. So I remember when we were 3 years old, I was very excited to write a grant, considered a small grant. It was $25,000, which to me was huge. And we got rejected. And, you know, when I call, I don't want to say the name of the foundation because I would be very embarrassed. I called them up and, you know, said kind of why we didn't get it. And I think our budget was only $30,000. She says, we're not going to give $25,000 to someone who has a $30,000 budget. And I said, well, how big would our budget need to be to get $25,000? She goes, you need to have at least $100,000. And I said, and I'm very embarrassed, I said it. Well, if we had a $100,000 budget, we wouldn't need your $25,000, which was not a very smart thing to say, I'll admit. No filter sometimes.
But I have a question about that. So why would they care about your budget? Explain the budget. What does that mean?
So, you know, when you're struggling, I mean, you can't, no one wants to invest in a sinking ship. So if you're not stable, and stability is measured by your finances,
right.
You know, we didn't, at that time, I wasn't collecting a salary, maybe a small stipend. There was nobody else paid. We were very, very small.
Right.
It's not appealing to a foundation. They want to see you have longevity. They want to see that you're going to be sustainable, that you're not dependent on that foundation to get money every year. Oftentimes it could be a one and done. So those are a lot of the struggles, you know, and I never discourage people from starting a nonprofit, but I also am realistic with them that the first couple of years, it's hard for you to get money. Because everyone says, "Oh, you just write grants." Well, you know, grant writing is a lot like applying to college. You won't get in if you don't apply, but you're not going to get in everywhere you apply.
Exactly.
And that's, you have to kind of learn the heartbreak is what I call it. You never count on money you don't have.
So when you mentioned the budget that she wanted you to have $100,000 budget in order to apply for the 25 grand. Now that's literally is that having cash flow of 100,000 or
just having a revenue source that your total revenue for a year would be around that. And that's where, and I can say this, you know, definitely during COVID has really impacted our business. Mm-hmm. We are very COVID careful here because of the age of my volunteers and staff with comorbidities.
Yeah.
So we do require all staff, including volunteers, to be vaccinated. We want all clients that we're serving to be vaccinated, or we will serve them virtually. That's kind of what we will do. We ended the fiscal year June 30th is the end of our fiscal year. Yeah. So in 2020, we ended it in the black. Yeah. In 2021, we ended in the black. We've had no staffing shortages or layoffs, but I will be honest with you, we have benefited from every federal, county, and state program we can get our little paws on.
Good.
So that's the only way that we've been able to survive with, you know, having to be open and close and open and close and things like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I, as an agency, we've gone through that ups and downs too. And, you know, we had to deal with the loss of some of our clients who basically went out of business or decided to take their marketing efforts in-house to save money. But most importantly, they just cut advertising. You know, why do they care to advertise? Like most of our clients are in the auto vertical and they just, they're selling out of cars. They don't even have cars to sell. So they're not going to want to advertise. And so that ended up changing our perspective on in terms of like, who are we targeting? How can we pivot? And a lot of businesses ended up pivoting. So speaking of pivoting, I would love to know, did you make any pivots?
Yes, we made a lot of pivots. And I'll have to be honest with you, that is my most hated word in the world, pivot, because yes. So 2020, when we shut down, we were able to put our workshops, our Bridge to Employment program, within a few weeks, we went virtual. We put that up online. Nice. And we, but you know, the challenge is many of the clients that we deal with don't always have reliable internet.
Right.
You can't just assume everyone has internet. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they're on their phone and it's going in and out. I mean, it is not a desirable situation. In the beginning, we had actually increased demand. So we had a lot, our numbers were actually up for our workshops. Our interview attire program, it just halted because it's really hard to dress someone and maintain 6 feet. You know, you are close. And that was before there was a vaccine. So we've really kind of hit the pause button. Then we start doing some virtual appointments. But to be honest with you, it's easier for men. You know, you can ask a man kind of what their waist and their waist size. Try it. Would you want me to outfit you virtually either through FaceTime or Skype or Zoom? I've done it a couple of times and there was a young woman I'm working with. And so I was asked, you know, in terms of sizes, you know, I'm looking at her, do you wear a small, medium, or large? She goes medium. And I'm pulling some things and I'm talking to her about kind of what she likes and colors and things like that. And then I just happened to say, by the way, if you have a pair of jeans, what size are your jeans? Oh, they're size 2. 2 is not a medium.
That's a small.
So then I'm like looking at everything I pulled, and then I just went, put all that back and got, and I said, could you go get a measure? You have a measuring tape and measure your hips and measure. So then I gave me a better, so that was, you know, fail on my part, not asking that up front. And, you know, and it's kind of touchy asking women what size they wear, what they weigh. That is a very touchy thing. But we can do it. It is just, it's a little, you have to be very sensitive. Yeah. Men are much better about it. Most men don't care. You know, they just want the clothes to fit, and they will, it's very rare for a guy to say, oh, I really thought I was a 34 inch waist, not a 36 inch waist. They often, it's very rare for a guy to even know what size they wear.
Yeah.
So, and our thing is no matter who we serve, we want to treat that client with dignity and respect. Nice. We never want the client to feel that they're being looked down on. We don't want them to feel like they're getting a handout or charity. We want them to, when they come for outfitting, for wardrobe assistance, to feel like they've gone to Saks and are working with a personal shopper.
I love that.
And we have really nice clothes. We don't have anything that has stains or missing buttons or broken zippers. We really want them to look good and feel good, because one of my fondest memories is we had a client, we work very closely with a lot of formerly incarcerated clients. And I had a client said to me, I said, have you ever worn a suit before? He goes, no. He says, but you know what? Today I feel like a man. And it's the first time I felt like a man in a long time. And that just really touched me.
Love that.
Yeah.
That is touching.
Because clothes do make a difference.
Yeah. But I love that, you know, you go to work making such a big difference in people's lives.
Thank you.
That's really fulfilling. And I want to talk about that a little bit. You know, we all start questioning. I know most people start questioning why they're here at an earlier age, but as we get older, it starts, if we still don't feel like we're clear on that, why, what's my purpose? It's this sort of ongoing question that most people ask. Some are lucky to find it sooner, to learn what their why is. Others are not. Seems like you have found your why, but how did you come to finding your why? And what suggestions would you have for others to, as they're searching for their why in this life?
You know, that is a good question. My background is I'm a former teacher. Mm-hmm. And I'm a good teacher, and I have the philosophy I can teach anything. I just have to be 2 or 3 pages ahead of everybody else in the teacher's edition, just to kind of learn what I need to do. And then I can figure out how to break it down and teach. I think there's so much emphasis on college preparation, college education. And I think that's not bad, but I think you need to look at what do you enjoy doing? I don't think there's anything worse than having a job and dreading getting up in the morning. And then you have to decide, is it the job or is it that workplace? Maybe you like what you're doing, but you don't like the company or the people you're working with, or you have a jerk for a supervisor or a boss. I never recommend just quitting. I don't like drastic moves, but follow your passion. And if you can find a way to follow your passion, so it won't feel like a job. And I think that's really important. And I think I saw something on, I've become addicted to the reels on Instagram. I don't make them, but I love to look at them. And you go down that, I call it the rabbit hole, and I'm gone. I'm lost for 30, 45 minutes. But, you know, there's one that says, you know, when you work for when you work for someone else, you're working 9 to 5, but when you work for yourself, you are working 24/7.
Yeah.
Never. And, you know, and this is a small community. I'm the director of a nonprofit. It's a very small, visible community. You're never not working.
Right.
So if I'm going out, you know, and meeting friends, of course, that's most likely pre-COVID. I don't do a lot of that now during COVID. But, you know, you don't drink too much out in public because people will know, oh, that's that direct, you know, all that matters. Yeah. All that counts, because you're never not working in a small community. Some like LA, you can be very separated, but here everybody knows everybody, or they've heard of you. Yeah. And so you want to, you know, my reputation is tied very closely to my agency's reputation. So I'm very careful to live a very clean life, nice. Albeit possibly boring, at least here in the Coachella Valley. If I'm going to do anything bad, I go out of the valley.
So speaking of Coachella, does that impact you at all in any way, positive way, negative way?
A little bit. We will see an uptick in our boutique, you know, the young people, Coachella kids coming in looking for things. And then I actually host, I'm an alumni of UCLA, and I've got connected with some former students, are now actually, when they started coming, I'll open up my house to let them stay for free.
That's so
awesome. For a very low cost. And obviously they didn't come in 2020 or 2021, but I think that they're going to be coming back this year. And it's fun. So it's kind of a fun, I've never been to Coachella. I'd like to go. I've been to Stagecoach, but I don't really like country Western music. So everyone's all excited. And I don't know. That's a little bit.
I love it. Well, the choices are endless at Coachella. So hopefully.
Yeah.
I've never been either. Every year I wanted to, but then by the time I thought about it, the tickets were so expensive.
It's very expensive. And, you know, there's always a scramble for where people, you know, so I have a group of former students from UCLA that will stay with me, and it's just kind of a hoot to be around them, and it's awesome. Kind of fun. So.
Is that where you taught at UCLA?
No. I taught elementary and middle school here in the Coachella Valley. And then I actually spent 10 years teaching at our community college, College of the Desert.
Awesome.
So
that's wonderful. Now, we're getting so close to the end. I'm so sad because I have so many more questions, but I'm just going to wrap it up into one question. If you could give one advice to other people who are interested in, possibly they have an idea, they have a mission, a cause that they believe in, and they want to start a nonprofit, what advice would you give?
The first thing I would advise someone is look around and see, is there really need in their community? And maybe instead of starting a nonprofit, see if you can partner with somebody. Because there's a lot of nonprofits out there often doing very similar things, a lot of overlap, and you're all competing for a limited piece of the pie. So I don't like to be Debbie Downer about that, but I do think it's important that you consider, you know, maybe you have a great idea and you can partner with someone. Maybe you don't need to start a nonprofit. Maybe you could partner with a church or a school, and you're providing services there for that group. So that is my honest thing, is that
smart.
It's not start it, but try to maybe work with someone else. If you have something that's really unique and there is no one, it's an unmet need in your community, then go for it. But realize that in the beginning, you're going to be doing it kind of part-time on the side while you're working and running your family, because you're not going to get money right away. And you don't want to be paying too much out of your pocket, because that becomes a great big hole. So that is my advice on that.
That's excellent advice. That's almost like starting a business. When people come to me and share their ideas with me, the first thing I ask is, have you done competitive analysis? Have you seen who else is doing it? And usually the answer is, oh no, no one else out there is doing it. This idea doesn't exist. And literally while they're talking, I'll Google it and I'll find five companies doing the same thing. I'm like, have you seen this company? Have you seen that company? And all of a sudden they're frozen. They're just like, oops. So, you know, you don't want to waste your money, your time, and time, which is so precious, in starting something that you think doesn't exist, but in reality it does. You just have to research it. Now, speaking of finding something in the nonprofit space, I feel like it's, obviously, for profit, it's a little bit different, because most brands or products or service-based businesses are out there promoting themselves so much. So it's easy to find them. But with nonprofit, it's a little harder to Google and find a nonprofit in a specific niche. It might exist, but it's hard to find them because a lot of them might not be as publicly visible.
You should be able to find it. They could be just doing really good work kind of on the down low. Yeah. I try to have a presence on our social media channels, and I think in the Coachella Valley, we're known.
Good.
But it's taken us, we started in really 2008, 2010 is when we got our first location. It's taken us a while to become more of a household name. I'm not quite sure we're there yet, but you know, we are more known. People may not remember our name, but they know there's somebody that does this, and they can't, you know, got to find where we are type of thing.
Well, if people want to connect with you, Connie, well, before talking about how they can connect with you, I would love for you to share with us how people can donate. If they're interested in donating, where would they go?
Well, if you're interested in donating, of course, we're nonprofits, so there is this element where we're always asking for money, and you know, you hate that part, but it is, you know, we do need funding. So our website is bfcloset.org, and on our website there is a donate button, and there's also the ability to buy tickets. And then you may be interested, your listeners may be interested in donating clothing. We serve both men and women. We're always looking for professional attire, but we also take more casual clothing too. Nice. And our hours are Monday through Thursday, 10 to 5. People can just bring in donations, or they on Fridays we're open 10 to 2. So they can just bring their donations in. We can provide a donation receipt for you. And we really appreciate it. We really do.
You know, the radio network that our interview is going to be on is an Armenian network. And a lot of Armenians go to Palm Springs a lot. And they
come to our boutique.
And so I'm going to make sure, you know, I myself will bring a lot of nice clothes to donate.
Thank you.
But also I encourage our listeners to go on bfcloset.org and donate. And
that would be great.
Good luck with the fundraiser. I'll follow up with some tips on how you can get more sponsors in terms of.
I appreciate that.
And thank you so much, Connie, again. And if people want to get in touch with you, should they go to the same website, bfcloset?
You go to the website, there's a contact and that comes right to me, or my email address is cgolds, that's with an S on the end, @bfcloset.org.
Amazing. Thank you so much.
Thank you for joining Startup to Success with Maria on KLOS 95.5 FM HD3 SoCalArmenian.com.